Om Shanti. Good morning. It's almost afternoon, but still good morning. I think as a group, we're quite a mixture because some of us have just finished Peace of Mind yesterday. And some of us are long-term BKs. And so what I was thinking is perhaps just to share some of my experiences over the years, especially to do with the practice of soul consciousness and perhaps the experience of soul consciousness. Because as far as I understand in this spiritual life, this is really the first and last step. And it doesn't matter whether we've been here for 1 week or 25 years, we're still delving into this subject, this fascinating subject of the self. And maybe before I go on, are you happy with the fans all going? Is that okay? It is okay. When we began to meditate, I sort of felt the whole room was going to lift off and sort of felt like we're in another plane altogether. A few years ago, at one of our retreat centres in Australia, one south of Sydney, between Christmas and New Year, a group of us decided to have 1 week of silence. And to be honest, in my life, that hasn't been something which I've really sought after or done very much. There's been a day here and a day there. But there was about 25 of us, and we went down to this retreat centre and celebrated Christmas quite well. And then the next day on Boxing Day, we sat together and began to discuss what we wanted to do for this week. And it was a very interesting discussion because we decided that we would sit together for 8 hours a day if we wanted to. It was actually optional in meditation. But we all began to discuss this whole concept of silence, and many of us had had plans to write things and we'd bought lots of reading material. And we all thought, well, you know, is that really silence? And we decided to try a whole week without even reading or writing. It was almost like just spending time only with me and my thinking, my thoughts, you know, which was quite an interesting idea. And in the first day of this week, I actually went with no agendas. I really decided I hadn't really thought exactly what I was going to do. But during the first day or two, everything that I began to observe in myself emerging, it all kept coming back to one thing, which I feel is just the pivot, the absolute pivot of this life, which is, in a sense, this first lesson, who am I? And I've often thought, you know, observing the way I've learnt in my life, and I think most of us, the way we're educated, is the way we sort of learn is in a very intellectual way, in the sense that we collect information. And it seems like, you know, the modern world is the world of unlimited information, which we've all stuffed in our heads. We know so much. But that this spiritual learning is something which is so different, because it's even just taking one idea rather than collecting many and constantly delving into the layers of one idea, you know, constantly removing the barriers or to get to the essence of the idea. And I've often thought that when Baba uses the language, you know, churning, he often tells us to churn something. What does he really mean by that? And I think, you know, in my early years, I often used to think it was just sort of, you know, extrapolating the idea on an intellectual level. But what I really believe Baba means by that is to just actually extract an experience out of it, so that I take an idea and I create a feeling inside myself. Actually, it becomes my own personal experience, which seems to be, I often feel, one of the great challenges of this spiritual life. And so during this week, I took up just one idea. I just wanted to delve into the depth of soul consciousness. And it was an extraordinary week. And I felt, you know, almost like, if I can use the analogy, I went up, you know, normally, you know, if you go up, or maybe I live, let's say I'm living in a building, I live on the second or third floor. It was like I took a lift to the 10th floor and was looking out at life in a completely different way, because it was through the prism of the reality of the self, if you know what I mean, rather than a mixture of body consciousness and soul consciousness and all sorts of things. Because repeatedly I find I keep coming back to the one thought, you know, what is the aim of this life? Really, ultimately, if we take away everything, and I think it's so simple, it's to become soul conscious and obviously come close to Baba. But I would even say that soul consciousness is the essential step to doing that. And one of the great dilemmas I've found, especially early on, and I think many BKs do, is that when we start this life, we have this massive, and we start to really engage with it, that this is what I want to do, I want to grow spiritually. We develop this huge, long shopping list of things I have to change in myself. I don't know about you, but each day my shopping list used to grow longer and longer. You know, I have to be tolerant, have to be patient, have to do this, have to do that. And it's just this massive shopping list, and sometimes you almost get tired looking at your shopping list. I can even remember in my early days of filling out a chart that I didn't make, actually, someone did, at night, and it had 108 points on it. And I'll tell you honestly, I never finished it once, because I always I fell asleep before it. So I still don't know what point 100 was. But you know, you, and I think that's a part of the journey. But if I really look at where I've been, I think in my childhood, my spiritual childhood, I had this almost innocent and naive practice of soul consciousness, you know, where when you really hits home who I am, you know, wherever you go, you know, you're a soul, we're all souls. You know, you walk down the street and you start to remove the differences of the bodies, and it's something incredibly enlightening. But it seems that as we settle into the journey of Brahman life, somehow we go into the extension. We go into the extrapolation of many, many things. But I'm finding more and more, you know, coming right back to the essence, once again, of, you know, what is the ultimate aim of this life? It's to become, you know, deeply soul-conscious, and that's the journey which I'm on. And it's become important for me because, you know, sometimes I think it's like a law, a spiritual law of conservation of my spiritual energy, if I can say that. Because we have a short time, in one sense, to achieve what I want to achieve. My own personal experience is, if, let's say, we have each day, I wake up and I've got 10 units of energy to spend on my spiritual progress or effort. If I put them in 10 different directions, or practice a little bit of tolerance here, a little bit of patience here, a little bit of self-respect there, a little bit of this there, I don't actually see I'm going anywhere very much, you know? I don't actually see a lot of progress. It's important in one way, but what I feel is that if I put all the 10 units in one direction, I actually deeply see that I'm getting somewhere. Because one of the, I think, the subtle things as we move on is actually, how do I gauge I'm moving ahead? Sometimes I think we just practice on a day-to-day level. And, you know, I wonder, well, what are the signs? You know, there are some feelings in me that I'm progressing, but how do I really see that I am progressing in the way I'd like to? And, if I look at Brahma Baba's life, and for me, you know, Brahma Baba is the reference point. He's the reference point. And I just love to listen to his words because he always comes back. I don't think I've ever heard a muli where he doesn't say, children, be soul conscious. It's like it was where his attention was, because in a sense, that's the foundation of everything. And what I've found personally is that sometimes when we do practice all these things, to be tolerant, to be patient, and all these things, actually, if I practice soul consciousness, they're the automatic byproduct, if you know what I mean. It's almost like when I put the seed of truth of who I am in its correct place, everything begins to build accurately around that correct place. It begins to happen in an automatic way. And I sincerely believe, you know, really even up until this day, that the reason why many BKs even can't meditate well is because we haven't really understood or really practiced that first lesson on a deep level. And sometimes I think we sit, even after quite a long time, and we think. We think about soul consciousness, we think about Baba, we think about these things, and we get the fruit of that positive thinking of a certain well-being. But it's not actually yoga, because yoga can only happen by definition when I'm in that pristine state of soul consciousness. That is the first step. And why Baba takes us back again and again and again, because until that first step is there, even the closeness of the relationship with Baba, which we desire, isn't there. And so sometimes it's like, you know, I really enjoy it actually. It's important to constantly keep revisiting the absolute foundation of this life. And so the big question really, how far have I become soul conscious? Now some of us here, I think, have perhaps been connected with the BK life for a week or two. Some for, you know, many, many, many years. And I mean, do you ever ask that question? I ask that question, you know, how far have I become soul conscious? And I can remember a few years ago coming back from Madhuban and really sitting with that thought for a while and really feeling, you know, I've got a long way to go. A long way to go to really be in that true state when I sort of fathom the depths of what soul consciousness is about. Because Baba talks about three types of consciousnesses. He talks about body consciousness, which we all know, and that's been so deeply etched in the soul, so deeply etched in the soul. I remember when I first started, I was with a friend of mine, and Daddy Jenki asked us after 3 months, what have you learned after 3 months of studying Raja Yoga? And this friend said, Daddy, I've learned how body conscious I am. After 3 months of every... And you know, Daddy, right. You know how she goes, right. She was really happy with the answer, because in a way, it's only when I understand who I am do I understand actually how deeply the identity of the body has penetrated every thought, every attitude, every action, every relationship, every bit of outlook I have. It's such a deep thing. But what I found really interesting in recent years is that there's a second type of consciousness Baba has been talking about more and more. And he says to BKs that it's not that you're really body conscious, but it's not that you're really soul conscious either. You're action conscious. You know how Baba's been talking about that? And I think that's an interesting one for us, because the culture of this world is doing, doing. There's no inner attainment. All attainment is through the results of actions, the fruits of actions. And even I think many of us who've come at this time, we're born when the service of the yajna is in full flow, you know, full mode, and we're sort of born into this, once again, this culture of service. And I think it's can be a real distraction actually for the true game, because it does give a limited sense of self-respect. There's a lot of limited attainment from it. But actually, the journey is the practice of soul consciousness. And when I came back from Madhuban this time, what I did was I made up a chart on my wall, and I had all the sort of aspects, I'd say, of the body conscious state of the soul. And then the soul consciousness sort of aligned towards from one to the other. For instance, you know, how far was I identifying with my mortality? How far do I really identify with my immortality? How far do I identify with being the form of just a point? How far do I still have this name and form sort of engraved in my intellect? How far have I moved in that direction? How far do I identify with being a temporary being? Or how far has the consciousness, the awareness of eternity really seeped into my being? Because in a sense, if I say I'm soul conscious, in a natural way, I identify with being, you know, eternal, immortal, imperishable, non-physical, all these things. Actually, that's my natural identity. And what I began to do, and I've done for some years, is just create some experiments to try to take myself out of the sort of the intellectual appreciation and belief of these things, so that it becomes a much deeper experience. So that, you know, this spiritual learning where it actually, I just take away the layers. And that's what I always see Brahma Baba does in this, the Mulis, is trying to get us to delve into the absolute depth of this journey back home to where I belong in that soul conscious state. And this is why one of the things, and I think in my spiritual journey, which has been so important for me, is creating inner experiences, if I can say that. And I, even before I was a BK, I was a wanderer. I was only telling someone this morning. I'm sure many of us here were wanderers. And I was a traveler for many years, wandering around the world. And I lived in many, many religious communities, from Southeast Asia right through to Europe and the Middle East, all sorts of places. And you know what? Everywhere I went, I enjoyed what I heard. You know, I really found it interesting. But what became the criteria for me? How do you experience it? You know, great ideas. You know how you read them all the time? Great ideas. But how do you bridge the gap from, you know, if I can say, the knowing and the believing, the easy part, that it a deep experience, so that I take out of it a deep experience for myself? Because I, you know, I think the knowing and the believing are easy. And in a sense, that's what religion is. And that's why just knowing and believing, things can become dogmatic. But Baba's way is to the third, what I often call the third dimension, which is educating us how to have spiritual experience, because there is no greater sustenance in this life to motivate me naturally is when I taste a new feeling in my mind, you know, like a new inner experience. And I remember sort of thinking that I think we've learned a lot about rational thinking. You know, we take an idea and we take it to a conclusion. That's something which science has taught us. That's what we learn in school. Even creative thinking, we take an idea and we just let it flourish and embellish. But experiential thinking, which is what I think Baba is teaching us, which is where I take an idea and I massage it into my feelings so that it becomes my own experience. That's an art that I have to educate myself in this life, just how to, you know, even I feel that just the idea of the soul, if I go into that, the method, the knowledge, the belief, when it's massaged deeply into my feelings, I have such a deep state of peace. This is really Baba's method to create an experience. And to me, experience, spiritual experience, are the most transforming things. We need them on a regular basis. And I remember once when I was very early in Gyan, I we came to India and we were in Delhi, and there was a conference in Delhi, and I don't even remember the name of it, and I don't even remember the year. Not very good at that stuff, but there was one brother there from London, and he was a scientist and very smart. He'd done the course and he liked it, but he had a lot of questions. And in those days, we used to take a bus. We took a bus from Delhi to Mount Abu. And let me tell you, the buses in 1977 in India were not like the buses today. It was really quite a challenge. And it was a 22-hour bus ride. And anyway, this brother, he had so many questions. And so he'd sit beside one person for an hour or two, question, until they were sort of finished off. And then he moved to the next one. And he went right round the bus by the time we got to Mount Abu. And the questions just kept coming and coming and coming. It was amazing. And when we got to Mount Abu, we were thinking, what can we do? Because it was like one person said there was a story in the Hindu scriptures that there was this devil, and whenever you cut off one head, 10 would grow. It was like whenever one question was answered, 10 would grow. But they were good questions. And they said, let's take him to meet Didi Manmohini. And Didi Manmohini was the co-administrator in those days with Daddy Prakashmani, before Daddy Janki was made. And she was famous for her drishti. She was famous for the ability to give a soul an experience just through her eyes. And so we thought, let's take him along there and see what happens. So he went along, and in 2 minutes of Didi sitting in meditation with Didi, taking drishti, he actually had an experience of being a bodiless soul. And it was just extraordinary, because all the questions began to finish. They all began to finish. It was, you know, they stopped almost immediately. It was like just a deep experience of who he was. He could answer the questions himself. And that's why I think, you know, Baba is encouraging us to delve deeper than the knowing and the believing and try to create experiences. And I even remember in 1986, and I don't know whether any of you were here, once Baba was meeting all the double foreigners, and he said to us, now you're going to do the realization course. Now, many of us had been VKs for 10 years, you know, regular, and Baba said, you've got to go back and do the course again, but you have to do the realization course. Was anyone here then? Anyway, it was like a long time ago, it was 1986. And, you know, I remember a lot of us thought, oh, this will be interesting. But Baba said, each point of knowledge has an associated experience. Each point of knowledge. Because he was saying, we take it on an intellectual level. We've got to learn how to churn it so that it becomes a part of my feeling. As I was saying, sort of massage it into my experience, extract the juice so that it creates a new feeling in me. That's really what he means by churning the knowledge. And that's why I think it's really good to set up long-term experiments for the self to delve into the depth of soul consciousness. And what I did over a period of time was to take different experiments. One about the form of the soul, and some about the what I call the nature of the soul, which is like, you know, the eternity, the immortality, being incorporeal, and even the identity of the soul, and create experiments to sort of break down the barriers, you know, delve into the depths of them. And with the form of the soul, the first experiment, it's something which I've always loved. And I remember when I first began in the early days, I listened to one muli. And in that muli, Baba said to wake up in the early morning and sit quietly, just sit very quietly and start to think, who am I? I am the soul. You are the tiny, tiny soul, becomes smaller and smaller and smaller. You are the smallest thing that exists. There's nothing more minute, becomes smaller and smaller. The whole muli, Baba just kept sort of taking us further and further, and he kept going further so that, you know, to take us into the subtlety of the form of the self. You know, and he kept sort of trying to encourage us to go. He was using the word smaller, smaller. There's nothing tiny. Go smaller, go smaller. So, and when I sometimes sit, I love to practice this because it's sort of, it's like in a natural way you begin to withdraw, withdraw, withdraw further. You know? And I sometimes love to have that practice because even Daddy Janki was talking about it this morning. It takes you into almost a natural state of detachment. You know, where you're not making effort to become a detached observer. It's like a natural state where there's, the soul is just in that subtle state, that tiny, tiny point. Tiny, tiny point of awareness of the self as that minute energy. And sometimes I even wonder, really, what holds the soul in the body? What holds the soul in the body? The soul is always, in a sense, separate from the body. And if I was to take a photo of it, and I know that you can't do that, but it's almost like the soul suspended in the center of the forehead somewhere, and all the molecules floating around it, if you could say that. But what holds me? It's only my identification with it. That's the only thing that holds me in this costume when you really look at it. And what happened to Brahma Baba was that his depth of focus on soul consciousness took him to a point where his identity as the soul was so deep that he just went beyond, you know, the image of the body. He let go of this. And I think that, you know, creating an experiment like this where the soul goes smaller and smaller and smaller, becomes so subtle that a point exists, but it really has no physical size. It's something so subtle, and that's the reality of the self. I remember even once in the early days, there was a brother who wrote a magazine, a little article. It was called Atom, Atma. I don't know whether you ever read this great article, but it was sort of an interesting idea. And he was talking about the unit of matter, the atom. That, you know, when man discovered that unit of matter, it opened up many dimensions for him. And when he began to learn to split the atom, the release of energy was phenomenal, absolutely staggering. Which, unfortunately, when the intellect of the human soul is, you know, negative, then we use it in a negative way. But he was saying that the atom's unit of matter, the atma, is the sort of Sanskrit name for the soul. It's like the unit of consciousness. And it means, in I, the living, the dweller in the costume, that in a sense, self-realization is like splitting the atma. It's like realizing who I am. And the energy that's released when we become soul conscious is an energy that changes this material world and puts it in a different direction. It's almost like splitting the atma is this self-realization, going into that depth of soul consciousness. And so it's like beginning to try to take it into deeper levels. And another experiment which I began to look into was the experiment of becoming incorporeal. It's sort of a part of the nature of the soul. Because I didn't know about you, but it's a funny word in English, isn't it? Incorporeal, non-physical. And yet, when Brahma Baba left, the number one student, there was just three words he mentioned, almost as the essence of his life, of 32 years of intense soul conscious practice. What was the first word he left us with? Incorporeal. I once asked Didi Manmohini in those early days, I said, Didi, out of all the efforts you make, what is the most important to you? And she said, to become incorporeal. In other words, to experience, in a sense, the reality of the true reality of the self is that I'm non-physical. Actually, I'm a distinct energy from the material world. Now, it's sort of a bit hard to describe in language, but it's something I've been practicing a lot in the last year. And I've had some really wonderful experiences by, in a sense, learning to feel distinct from the material world. In a sweet way, not in a really harsh way, that I'm just this non-physical energy sitting in this physical world. It's almost like the plastic, the stage that the soul's acting through. And I've found that when I do that, naturally I feel so uninfluenced by things happening around me. Because, you know, how often have you ever, do you ever feel what I've often noticed when I became a BK, I was amazed how, when I really began to realize how sensitive I was to everything. You know, just every little thing can influence my mood or my feeling, you know? Just a word from a person, a look from a person, a vibration can completely influence me. It's like the soul has totally surrendered to external energies, and every little thing, in a sense, can control the feeling in my mind. You know, it's like, how weak have I become? I've surrendered all my dignity to the external world, and it's like it's controlling everything happening in me. And I found the more I just practiced sitting as that seed and just feeling, what does it feel like? I'm non-physical and I'm sitting in this material world, that just feeling distinct made me feel quite uninfluenced. Like Baba said, almost like a guest in the drama. So you're participating, you're involved, but you've got that beautiful sense that it's not controlling you, but you're in the state of control. And the more you experiment, I think, you know, one of the ways that the soul can actually understand that it's moving forward, that it's progressing, that it's actually becoming more pure, is that I feel less influenced by all the things in the drama. You know, they just can't come and just pierce the heart like they used to, or just control my mood so quickly. And I think even, you know, an experiment around being eternal and immortal. I remember once even Daddy Jenki saying the essence of soul consciousness is to experience eternity. You know, it's a big one, isn't it, really? I think that, you know, to one of the things of the human soul as we become more and more body conscious is this incredible fear of loss of my body and, you know, this identification with my temporary self. And to shift this deep habit, this deep identification, so that I re-emerge the original feeling of being eternal, it's quite a journey. And I've often sat in meditation and I ask myself the question again and again, because it can become a very sort of intellectual thing, but what does it feel like to be eternal? What are the feelings when I always exist? That is the reality. I always exist, because when I'm in that state, once again, automatically I think, I start to develop a sense of fearlessness about life. You know how much, I mean, how many fears do we have? How big is the shopping list of fears, really? It's so big, isn't it? And I think as I start to sow the seed of true soul consciousness, it's like it cuts off the tree of fear at the roots, because I'm returning to that original state of being an eternal being. And what I feel too is that the insecurity, I think one of the deepest things the soul's collected in body consciousness is this amazing insecurity. There's so much fear of loss, and the more we become insecure, the more we hold on, the more fear grows. And that really, in a sense, describes the modern culture in the world, that As I start to open the door to the feelings of eternity, then somehow we open the door to this amazing security, sense of eternal, you know, the true security that who am I? I am the soul and I belong to Baba. It's almost like that makes the soul so secure in itself. And so their feelings, so it's almost like I'm experimenting in the deep layers of soul consciousness so that I move out of the theoretical understanding and start to create these inner feelings in myself. Because I feel when these seeds are created, the whole tree of virtues and powers is an automatic consequence when I delve into the depth of soul consciousness. And even what I would call the identity of the soul too. Because my experience is that sometimes BKs, when they begin in this life, we realize how body conscious we are, and I make this decision, I want to become, you know, a lot more soul conscious, and so I better get up at 3 o'clock in the morning. No, 2 o'clock in the morning. No, 1 o'clock in the morning, you know, and we do. I tell you, some people have done that because we sort of feel I really want to get into this. And I've seen some make so much effort, like a huge investment, but quite frankly, not as much return for the investment put in. You know that experience? I think a lot of us experience that sometimes. It seems like I make so much effort in one direction, but the return isn't as great as I feel it should be. And one of the reasons I believe is that deep down, I practice being this subtle point. I practice being incorporeal. I practice so many aspects of soul consciousness. But I hold on to the identity of being an impure soul. Subtly, my identity is that I'm an impure soul. You know, it's so deeply ingrained into my consciousness. Whereas I think a knowledgeful soul, I feel one of the ways that we can really say I've become knowledgeful is when I accept Baba's understanding that I am a pure soul. Because sometimes we feel that's not true. Because I'm not that yet. And so subtly then I keep identifying with what being impure. But I think that Baba's way is to identify with being that pure soul. And I feel that that actually begins to reemerge, you know, so much self-respect inside the soul. It's actually my duty to sort of connect with that set of sanskaras, because otherwise, subtly deep down, my identity is with my weakness rather than my strengths. And I've got to reemerge those original sanskaras. One of my early experiences, which really changed me, was my first meeting with Baba, actually. And I don't know whether those who've come for the first time know much about this, but in the early days, up until about 1986, we used to come to Madhuban. And one of the reasons we came was to listen to Shiv Baba speak through the medium, or Bap Dada through Daddy Gulzar. And when Baba would speak to the whole group, and then he'd meet us individually. And I first came in 1975, and I met Baba in the History Hall in Madhuban, which is, I think, a much smaller room than this room, and there was about 30 people there at that time. It was very small in those days. And I had been practicing in London for about 2 months, 20 days and about 3 hours. I was so green, you wouldn't believe, you know. But I think, you know, we started and Daddy Janki sort of thought, you know, get them to Madhuban, you know, as soon as possible before they run off somewhere. And when we came, I arrived, I can remember, I think it was on the 4th of December, on the 5th of December. Trying to make a point here. Baba came and spoke the muli, and then afterwards there was personal meetings, and always we'd sit right in front of Baba, and Baba always meets through drishti. He always sees in so deep into the soul. And unless you've really experienced Baba's drishti, it's hard to describe how deep that drishti goes. But my experience was that Baba looks so deep into the soul, so deep. And I felt like an open book. It was almost like I felt completely comfortable. It's like if a person was to look that deeply, we'd become a bit defensive. You know, it's the most private parts of the soul. And I felt his vision wandered around the soul. And it's almost like his vision fell on the original, if I can say, the pure part of the soul. And it was an extraordinary feeling. It's almost like Baba pulled that original part, the elevated part, the pure part, to the surface. And it was almost like he introduced me to who I could be or who I was, you know? I had a real feeling, and it wasn't just a vision. There was sort of a feeling of what purity really means. When the soul feels so clean inside, and the dignity of that state, the, you know, the absolute beauty and royalty when I feel I'm clean, you know, I'm original, I'm as I should be. And I tasted that. It was almost like he introduced that to me and said, that's who you really are. And that's, I've always felt, that's the part I should identify with. Rather than, it's such a subtle thing. If I make so much effort on the one hand, and yet I hold on to the perception of the old me, it's like I'm trying to move forward, but I've got a chain on my leg. I just don't really see that I'm moving ahead. It's a very subtle thing, because I think we feel it's arrogant to feel that I'm pure, or it's not honest, because I'm not. You know what I mean? I still have all this stuff that I've got to delve through. But Baba's way is to appreciate the goodness, know the goodness in the self, and automatically the old stuff begins to heal. And I think that, you know, even really experimenting, sitting in yoga sometimes and actually asking myself, what does it feel like to be a pure soul? Because when I taste the fragrance of the soul without blemish, and it is possible even in this state, it's like I know where I'm going. I know that fragrance, because that is the reality. Where I'm at now, or I've been, is the conditioned state of the soul. But often we feel that is the reality, and that's why we identify with it. And even I've had a lot of experiments in the vision of the other as the soul. And I really love this experiment, because I think it's a very deep thing. You know, sometimes when we understand we're a soul, we look at a little spot on the forehead of someone else and say, oh, you're a soul, you know. And it's a bit superficial. But to go into the depth of the idea that I am the soul when I experience it, and through the yoga of the intellect, touch another as a soul. Like, I sort of go right beyond all their physical conditions. It's like, in a sense, the Buddha yoga is where I actually touch, I give feeling, I connect with the other as a soul beyond their bodily conditions. I can only really do it when I experience myself beyond my own body consciousness. But to me, that's the foundation of true communication. And yet, I didn't know, one of the things that I've realized is it's so deep. The sanskaras that we've collected over thousands of years, of Baba said, of attraction to name and form. And the influence of name and form is so ingrained in this. You just think, how subtle is it when you meet somebody, their attractiveness or lack of it, how the instant judgment of them according to their physical conditions sets a whole lot of thought patterns going off inside my head. And it connects with other sanskaras too. And I think I think it's so deep, this ability to connect to the other as a soul, and it's such an important practice, something that even after many years I'm feeling that I really have to delve into a lot more deeply, because it's connected with good wishes. And what I've found is essential to spiritual progress and moving forward is to have these deep good wishes for the other. And it's not just for relationship, actually. It does help relationship. But the real reason is that when I have good wishes for another, I have to connect to a clean part of myself, you know. It's like I have to find a clean part of me to generate those good wishes. And so each time I do, I keep returning to a clean part of me, a pure part of me. It helps me stay clean. If I have bad feelings for someone, it's almost like I instantly connect with an impure part of the self, and that networks with all my old sanskaras, you know? And just like when I see someone, I have good wishes, it connects with a clean part of me, and that networks with my original sanskaras. It's a way for the soul to become quite pure quite quickly. Because even if someone does something wrong or bad or says something wrong, and I actually have good wishes, I'm changing my habit of generating old feelings that network with my impure sanskaras or my ego. It's like I'm reprogramming a whole different response to other people. And so I just think even that experiment, it's like Baba constantly reminds us, children, you know, you are a soul. And it's like, I've got to do the work. I can remember when I first started in London, I had a job at Imperial College, and it was a strange job, actually. I was a whole lot of BKs worked in this physics department, and we were scanning, looking for the quark in those days. You know, they'd taken these photographs of nuclear, you know, or particles going through an electron chamber, and I don't know how I even got this job, but we had to photograph these things. And I had to get there, I had to walk right through Hyde Park. And I can remember, you know, waking up in the morning and meditating, then listening to the Muli and getting these ideas. And then I had about a 40-minute walk, and I just used to absolutely try and have one thought that I'm the soul. And I'd walk just in as being a soul. And, you know, I had such feelings of being completely light. I would say I began to feel why people say that they levitate, you know. I don't think you do personally, but the soul feels so light. There's a sensation that I was sort of just sitting here and my body was walking, you know. It's like, I think we actually have to keep applying the practice of soul consciousness to each aspect of life. Because when we do delve into the depth of it, it keeps opening up my ability to have a deeper connection with Baba. I often think of the simple idea that if God's a soul, he's on the FM dial. If I'm body conscious, I'm on the AM dial. I know the FM dial exists, but I can't tune in. Many times we sit and meditate by just thinking. But to actually just tune in, I have to go up to the FM dial. I have to be as subtle as Baba is to actually experience on that level. And I often feel there's a spiritual law. As much as I become detached from the body, that's how much I open up the door to inner spiritual experience. Because it's such a motivation in this Brahman life to create new feelings and new experiences internally. And I think that, you know, to create my own experiences and practice them over a period of time, I think is something which is really special, because the byproduct of deep soul consciousness is automatic detachment, even like Daddy said this morning. It's a very sweet detachment. It's not attachment of disconnection. It's a detachment of just living in this world and feeling uninfluenced by it. You know, I'm engaged, connected, communicating, close, And yet I just don't feel so vulnerable, you know, to all the things that are happening in this world, vulnerable to all the influences of this world. It's the deep practice, the deep practice, the deep practice over a period of time to create a real foundation. And that's why sometimes I even ask myself, am I so much in the state of action consciousness, you know, where the culture of doing, we get the fruit of it, or am I really sowing these deep seeds of soul consciousness so my attainment is from that deep spiritual focus and not just, you know, the fruits of service. That's okay, but I think Baba wants us to really do that deep, deep work. Take it deeper, take it deeper. It is a new type of learning, I feel. Though, the more I focus on me, the actions take care of themselves. I really believe that. The more you focus on action, you actually worry about them and, you know, get caught up in them in that way. It's sort of, it's a priority in myself. It's almost like that. It's nothing wrong with being busy, but I've got to, it's a deep priority. It's a form of loving myself that the first thing in life is to look after my own state of mind, my stage and my effort, and that natural attention is there, I think. Anyone else want to mention something? Wayne? I think he was just talking about drishti and the power of drishti when it's pure, correct? And if I'm just summarizing, and that how can we practice that more with each other? Would you say that's right? Yeah. I feel for me at the moment, the practice of good wishes is so important. I can't say, and yet it's such a deep thing, I think. It's the whole foundation of good service, good relationships, is the ability to have goodwill. And just look at Baba and how his vision, you know, transforms a whole hall of people. And those who haven't sort of sat with Baba, and many of us here, we've met in, there's a huge hall down below in Shantivan, which is the BK complex at the bottom of the mountain. I don't know whether you've been there, but there's a hall that takes how many people? 20,000? And sometimes it's amazing. It's just such an amazing scene. There's sometimes, you know, 20,000 people sitting, meeting Baba. And if you've ever stood up and seen all the faces, if you ever turned around, it's one of the most beautiful things you'll ever see. No matter what age, everyone's like a child, glowing. It's like they're in love, you know. And I think it's the response to the, when someone looks at you with such value and such love and such goodwill for you to become who you can be, it just brings out so much beauty in us. You know, we just respond in the same way. It's like the thoughts in the mind become so elevated and so loving that the face just radiates. It's incredible. Old or young, don't they? They just radiate. There's something incredibly beautiful. And I've thought a lot about this because sometimes we practice good wishes and they're not effective. And I think that if I'm very honest and I look deeply, that sometimes there's a subtle filter. You know, I say, oh, I'm having good wishes, but I carry certain memories that are sitting in my consciousness of others. And it's like a filter that my thinking goes through. And so there's this subtle, not such a good vibration that people see through. Sometimes I'm almost innocent to myself, you know? It's almost like you've taken photographs in your memory of someone's behavior, someone's past, someone's activity, and your vision is passing through that filter. They pick it up. And so there's not that real openness. There's not that real response. And then we wonder, what's wrong with them? They're not picking up my good wishes. It's actually me. And even I remember Daddy Jenke's been talking about it recently, that this word, and we were talking the chit, which means the memory. And it's quite interesting because she's saying it's like we have memories stamped in the memory track. They're like stains. They're stains. And it's almost like I'm looking through these stains at you. So it's not completely clean. And that's why they're not as effective. And she was even saying to me when she was in Australia last year, she said, have you done the deep work of sort of cleaning your memory track? And I said, I beg your pardon? And I'm still trying to get to the bottom of that one. But I'm starting to understand. It is almost like filters that, and you don't even realize they're there sometimes. And that's why there's not success in relationship as there could be. Or there's not that intensely good connection. Because I think still, in my conscious mind, I think I'm having good wishes. But subconsciously, I'm looking through the filters of the past, which are blocking that absolutely purity of intent, and that which Baba talks about. And that's why I think, you know, the power of good wishes is such an important part of my spiritual progress. I really believe that. I don't think it's just for good relationships. It's about me generating good thoughts. I often feel it's hard to meditate unless I have good wishes. Because what happens? You know that subtle karmic stuff in the mind? Feelings about people, because it connects with the goodness in the soul. And that's what I really believe that that's one of the main reasons Baba teaches that. Because what do you do when you generate good wishes? You connect with the elevated part. You have to connect with an elevated part of yourself. So you connect with that part in your sanskaras, and that will network with the elevated sanskaras. So it's like you're keeping them on the surface, and the impure ones are getting less and less attention, basically. As soon as I connect with a fault in another person, it's almost like instantly I connect with a part of myself, you know, the bad feeling part, and it will start to network with the ego, the anger, and in all the subtle forms, in a sense. And so good wishes is keeping my state of mental cleanliness on a level that's sustaining the good sanskaras in the soul too. It's such an important thing. And I think the more we're like that, the more we like ourselves, there's no doubt. But then again, I think the process of becoming pure is so tricky that it's almost learning to be detached, being honest. I know the reality is that I have weakness and impurity, but the truth is that my original nature is clean. And it's almost like saying, well, a knowledgeful soul will not deny the reality of my weakness, but I remove myself, I've become a bit detached from it. To me, that's the absolute mark of a knowledgeful soul. I don't buy in and feel hurt and sensitive by my impurity. It's there, but I'm now engaging and changing it, rather than as soon as I see it, or, oh no, I'm like that, oh gosh, you know, I'm a hopeless case sort of stuff. You know, like I'm reacting to my own stuff. I think the knowledgeful soul is even detached from, so that I can work objectively in myself rather than buy into it. Because I think Baba's way is more keep you know, one person was saying to me about the history of religion, which I found quite interesting, that religions by their very nature would always offer the ideal, you know, this is the way you should be. So it created so much suppression of the reality. And then out of religion was born psychology, which was sort of a reaction to that suppression, to sort of try and see the truth in a sense. And so psychology told us about all the stuff that is based on the model of body consciousness, and it goes into the depth of it. And yet sometimes people discover that we get lost in it. We get so consumed by the extension of my negativity that it becomes a world in itself. Whereas Baba just says, well, it exists. Now, you know, spirituality is knowing, and then all the effort is in change, not in just sitting there with all my impurity. And And that's, I think, what spirituality is just actually bringing change rather than just sort of indulging in everything that's in my past and getting so caught up in it and influenced by it. Anyway, I don't know if that's a tangent, but I feel that for spiritual progress at the moment, those good wishes are absolutely essential for me and my relationships with Baba as well as others, all three. It's a very important thing. Anyway, don't know, is there anyone else who wanted to ask something or? I think a good wish, it can be a conscious thought of another's virtue, another's quality, but it will generate a feeling. So Baba always uses good wishes and pure feelings. It's the feelings that have the effect. Because, you know, the old story about communication, that, you know, when you communicate with somebody, you know, that what is it? 90% is nonverbal, the feelings and the body language, and 10% is verbal. So, you know, if you're talking to somebody, the impact of your connection is 90% more the feelings they're getting from you. And that's why when your mind's clean, people get good feelings from you and they'll feel close to you and they will generate love for you. So the cleaner my mind is, the more I see virtue, the more I have good thoughts, they will, from their heart, show love too and good wishes. It's a natural karmic thing. And that's why I think we educate ourselves to see virtue and what's good about people and store good memories of people, because that will generate clean feelings which touch their soul and will help them generate those clean feelings too. It's the feelings which are the important part of it, I think. And that's the whole, I think, story of transformation is really transforming the deep feelings in the soul. Mm. Anyway, I think that Dr. Nirmala has arrived and she just wanted to come and ask everybody what you would like to do over the next few days.
Your evening class session, 5:30, as was announced this morning. Experiments in meditation and some exercises in meditation you will have this evening. The BKs who are here, I think half only are here out of the gathering. So my question is, because big group will come, I think 8th, 9th is a date for arrival, huh? 9th and 10th are dates of arrival. So until then, we will be a small group. And do you have any suggestions what we should be doing? Because evening, I thought it's best to have meditation every day, 6:30 to 7:30 until 9th, 10th, okay? But what about morning? What would you like? Workshop, classes, sharing, Madhuban Vasi Brothers classes, what you would like?
Many of us are trying to go through the annual medical checkup. So if some period could be given before the big, big group comes, then they'll fill up the hospital as well.
So we should all go to hospital.
Yeah, give us a short, give us a little break so that no serious class is taking place at that time, maybe just meditation.
That you decide with the hospital. I don't know anything, huh? I'm asking about classes and spiritual refreshment. Rose, yeah, take the microphone. It's turned off also.
The vibration of good wishes and good feelings with each other.
Would you accept questions based on some sections of the knowledge that are not very clear to the senior teachers to give classes on those where we could just write and ask.
So what you can do is give questions and suggestions in writing also. Questions especially, we can have session with question-answer, okay? Anthony?
Clearly this morning was a great success for all of us who have been here, where we had one of our seniors talking about one aspect. This morning was soul consciousness. I had the thought just now that over the next few days we could use this morning time to have a class very similar to this, really going through each of the major points of our gyan. For instance, tomorrow to have one of our seniors talking in such a personal way about the Supreme Soul. And then the day after tomorrow, again, in a very personal way, not the class, not information, but just churnings and experiences, etc., etc., about the cycle of time and karma, etc. I think that would be very helpful for everybody, guests and BKs included.